It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. A year to go before the 2024 presidential election, we get analysis on the new Marquette University Law School poll with poll director Charles Franklin. And you can be part of the discussion. Call in with a question, share comments along the way. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Charles Franklin is a professor of law and public policy at Marquette University. The new poll came out yesterday. Charles, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you. And your new poll falls in line with polls released last week by the New York Times and Siena College, showing that President Joe Biden leads former President Donald Trump by 2 percentage points among registered Wisconsin voters. How does this gap compare with how Biden won the state in 2020?
He won the state in 2020 by 0.6 of a point, just under 1 percentage point. And also, both the Times and our poll have a margin of error that means a 2-point Biden edge is inside that margin of error. In effect, we're both saying this is a very close toss-up race, but Biden may be a shade ahead.
As you mentioned, this is considerably inside the poll's margin of error. So how should we frame that? How should we approach this snapshot?
Yeah, I think I would read this as a very close race. Could easily go either way. Polling a year out is for us to understand where things stand today. It's not a forecast of where the vote will end up in November, 12 months from now. But if you look at our history of close races in the state and presidential races, at least, you would expect a close race. Let's watch and see how things change over the next 12 months. But right now, we're seeing a very close race with, as I say, maybe the slightest of edge to Biden. And I think in broad terms, when people see a poll result, if the difference between the two leading candidates is less than that margin of error, which is 4.5 points in our case, you should think of that as really a toss-up.
Mm-hmm. So what did respondents who voted in 2020 indicate about their intentions in 2024?
Well, there it depends on who the candidates are. If it's a repeat of 2020 with Donald Trump and Joe Biden, then there's very little movement. We asked people how they voted in 2020. To be clear, that's their recollection today of how they voted. We didn't interview these same people 3 years ago. But if that's the case, Donald Trump holds on to 95% of the voters that he had last time, and Joe Biden holds on to 94%. And the crossover is just 3% from Trump to Biden and 4% from Biden to Trump. And there's a handful of undecideds in both cases. So that's a really does cast 2024 as a rerun of 2020. It's the same characters and it's a script we've seen before.
Now, you look at different matchups, different mixes here, so to speak. Your new poll suggests Biden would lose against Florida Governor Ron DeSantis by 2 percentage points. Nikki Haley, former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, would beat Biden by 9 points if she were the Republican candidate. Why might Haley be faring so much better in a hypothetical matchup against Biden?
Yeah, it's very interesting. I think that it's because both Trump and Ron DeSantis carry a pretty heavy baggage, especially for Trump, where everyone knows him and everyone has a strong opinion about him, whether pro or con. And that's mostly true of DeSantis, though not quite as much. In contrast, Nikki Haley has 33% of the sample who say they don't know enough about her to have an opinion, favorable or unfavorable. You'd think that would be a weakness, but I think what we see in the data is that having a weaker opinion of her has given respondents sort of free rein to let their reservations about Joe Biden come to the fore. So, for example, we just talked about the 2020 vote and how people would vote now. when it's a Nikki Haley, Joe Biden race, Haley still gets 96% of the Trump voters, but she also picks up 15% of the former Biden voters. Remember, Trump only was picking up 4% of those former Biden voters. And that, I think, is really the key here, is that Haley, if you will, takes advantage of the reservations again about Biden, but she doesn't bring the baggage that Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis bring. And that allows her to attract independents and even win over some former Biden voters.
Oh, that's interesting. We have Charles Franklin talking about the latest Marquette Law School poll. Director of the poll, Charles Franklin. You can join in with your questions and comments at any point. 800-642-1234. Charles, what does your poll tell about how likely Republicans or Democrats would cross party lines in the presidential race?
In general, voters are pretty hardcore in their party these days. But there are these differences across the three Republican candidates. When it's a Trump-Biden race, Biden gets 94% of the Democratic vote, with 6% crossing over for Trump. But Trump holds only 88% of Republicans and loses 10 points to Biden. So you can see that we talk a lot about Donald Trump having an iron grip on the Republican Party, and he is very strong there. But Joe Biden actually is better liked among Democrats than Trump is among Republicans. And that shows up in this lower loyalty rate of 88% for Trump versus 94% for Biden. Independents in a Trump-Biden race are exactly evenly split, 47-47. But when we move to DeSantis, party loyalty is a little higher with Republicans and the same for Biden, but independents go to DeSantis 58-37. And when we go to Haley, again, party loyalty is strong, but independents also give her 58% and only 37% for Biden with 11% undecided. So you can see again that when it's Trump, minds are made up and the splits are pretty strong. But 30% of Republicans, or 28% in this sample, 28% of Republicans have an unfavorable view of Trump. And that shows up. They're still reluctant to cross over to vote for Biden, but the loyalty to Trump is a little bit lower than it is for either Haley or DeSantis.
The age of President Biden has been a point of contention, a point of conversation in this early part of the race. What did respondents say about age?
Yeah, it continues to show up in our polling data as an issue for voters. We ask people, how well does the phrase too old to be an effective president describe Biden, and how well does it describe Trump? 55% say too old describes Biden very well. Only 25% say it describes Trump very well. And that's very much in line with our national polling and other people's. It's only a four-year gap in age between Biden and Trump, but the perception is much stronger for Biden than it is for Trump.
Law Professor Charles Franklin is director of the Marquette University Law School poll. The latest poll out yesterday examining national and state issues, favorability ratings. Join in throughout the discussion. Call in with a question. You can share your thoughts. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore the new Marquette University Law School poll published Wednesday. Queries Wisconsin voters on potential presidential candidate matchups, favorability ratings, Call in with a question. Share your comments along the way at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Charles Franklin is here, professor of law and public policy at Marquette and director of the Marquette Law School poll. Charles, in less than 10 weeks, the presidential primary season starts up in Iowa. If more Republican candidates drop out of the race, as we saw former Vice President Mike Pence did last month, support for the remaining candidates could coalesce, it could grow. How will your polling practices change in this period?
Well, what we've historically seen is if somebody is going to make a run late, the polling has tended to pick that up in late November or December. Excuse me. Once the Iowa caucus takes place, the first voting event, then we see candidates drop out and voters shift their preferences either to the front runner or whoever finished surprisingly strongly in Iowa, and followed, of course, by New Hampshire. So I would expect some movement in that period. We are going to do our next poll after the Iowa caucus in later January. So at that point, we'll pick up how much the late surge may have come about, as well as the impact of those first voting events.
You know, the presidential election being a year away, what value is there in asking who people will vote for so far in advance?
Sure, that's a great question. And the Nikki Haley number is a good example. I tried to stress at the beginning, this is a poll of where we stand today, not a forecast of where the election will end up. So saying that Nikki Haley's ahead by 9 points today is surprisingly large. We don't see 9-point presidential elections in Wisconsin recently. But the point is that she's not very well known right now, and this survey shows that, and shows that she benefits from people not knowing her. If she were to emerge as the nominee, people would come to know her much better. She would start to become identified in their minds with various positions, some that would help her, some that would hurt her, and we would expect the race between her and Biden to tighten considerably over the course of the year. But the point here is, by doing the survey today, we understand where we are now, so that repeat the survey through November and we can see how people's minds change over that time. If it's Trump and Biden, will we see changes over that period, or will we see a lot of stability, which is sort of what we saw in 2020? But if it were to be DeSantis or Haley or possibly anybody else, then we would have a period in which voters would have to come to know those alternative candidates in a way that they already know Donald Trump and Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. So it's making a movie out of all the still pictures, all the snapshots of monthly polls. You string them together and you get a movie and you see how the world has changed.
A bit about methodology. How many voters were surveyed? How did they break down by party affiliation?
Sure. We are doing the survey in a new way, but let me just answer the question directly. We interviewed 908 Wisconsin registered voters between October 26th and November 2nd. That has a margin of error of 4.5 points. And the Republican sample is 402 Republicans with a margin of error of 6.8 points. So when we talk about the GOP primary, that has that larger margin of error. And the sample is 30% Republican, 29 Democratic, and 41 Independent. And compare that with the long-term partisan balance since 2020 is 30% Republican, 28 Democratic, and 41 Independent. So we're very close to the average over the last 3 years.
You mentioned something's new and different this time in your approach to the polling?
Yes. We've done the poll by telephone only throughout the history of the poll until June. In June, we shifted to what's called a hybrid sample. we sample 690 respondents from the voter registration list in Wisconsin, and another 218 who were sampled by their mailing addresses and recruited to do surveys by the company that we work with to conduct the surveys. If we sample people on the voter list, we send them an email invitation to conduct the poll online. We also send a text message to their phone number. And if we don't hear back from them, we call them and follow up with an interview with a live interviewer. And so we're trying to reach people in whatever way is more convenient to them, through email or text, and both of those have a link to our survey online. You can only take it once, and you can only take it if you've been sampled. So you don't just get to volunteer to do the survey. And we do use phone numbers and phone calls for people we can't reach otherwise.
Is it getting harder these days to get people to respond and to pick up? You've been doing
this a long time. Very much so. And we've seen it just over the history of the survey, of the Marquette poll. In 2012, when we started the poll, we would get 7% response rates. Now, people may think that's terrible, but it was the industry standard in 2012. At the end of 2022, we were falling to 2%, maybe even a shade under 2%. And the poll was pretty accurate in 2022, so that's not necessarily means the poll will be wrong, but it becomes much more expensive and difficult to reach people that way. And I think we all know that not everybody picks up the phone when it rings, especially if it's an unknown number. So using this new methodology, we've increased our response rate a little bit, about 2.7% on this survey. Still, that's an improvement rather than going down. But the biggest thing is, this is just more convenient, and people like doing the poll online when they can do it whenever it's convenient for them. The format of the survey is designed so it's easy to do on a smartphone or a tablet or a laptop. And so the experience of doing the survey seems better for respondents who enjoy doing it that way.
Talking about the latest Marquette University Law School poll with its director, Charles Franklin. You can join in with your questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Marcus in Milwaukee is here. Hi, Marcus. What's on your mind?
Good morning, Kate. So I guess I was wondering how early polling like this potentially could adversely affect candidates as it goes further down. Just because I believe that from one of my political science classes at UWM that there's a trend where people feel that their candidate has it wrapped up, and so therefore they don't actually turn out on election day.
Marcus, thank you. Charles, what do you make of that?
Yeah. Sorry. This is a great question, and it's one where there are equal and opposite expectations. Marcus, you mentioned people feel like your candidate has it wrapped up, so they don't bother to vote. But there's also the flip side of it, and that is that the other person's candidate, the one that's losing, their supporters supposedly feel like, well, it's hopeless, so I won't vote. Those are exactly opposite effects on how the vote would shift, but we hear both of them mentioned as a possible effect. There have been studies on the role of hearing about polling and whether that affects your vote. And some of those studies do show modest effects on how people behave. But the vast majority find that most people care about their own preferences rather than the implications of the poll. And on average, the polls tend to be pretty accurate. They're not necessarily individually accurate, but the average is pretty good. And that suggests that there's not a net effect of the polling one way or another, or else the averages would miss systematically. So bottom line is, this is something that's important. But as I say at the end of every final poll release, polls don't vote, people do. It's up to you. Go out and do what you want.
I think you've said that more than once.
I have.
Oh, we're talking.
It's absolutely true, and it does directly address Marcus's concern.
Marquette University Law School Professor Charles Franklin, director of the Marquette Law School poll. And you can be part of this discussion about the latest poll out Wednesday. Call in with a question. Share your thoughts. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Marquette University Law School poll, it takes the temperature on what voters are thinking a year ahead of the 2024 presidential election. The new survey also asking whether Wisconsin is going in the right or wrong direction. Call in with a question. Share your views. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Charles Franklin is professor of law and public policy at Marquette and director of the Marquette Law School poll. Charles, your poll asked voters how much they approved of U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin, Senator Ron Johnson, Governor Tony Evers, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. What stands out to you about the results?
For the most part, it's relative stability in the feelings about Baldwin and Johnson. Baldwin, of course, is up for re-election next year, but that campaign really hasn't ramped up without a Republican candidate yet. Here we are asking favorable or unfavorable opinion. 41% had a favorable view of Baldwin, 43% unfavorable, and 15% said they didn't know enough to have an opinion. That's down a few points from June when it was 3 points net favorable, more favorable than unfavorable. Over the long haul, with Baldwin, we've seen her favorability numbers generally be a little bit positive, a little more favorable than unfavorable, but with fluctuations much as we're seeing here. So a little bit of change, and she's a little underwater. Ron Johnson is 40 favorable, 50 unfavorable, with 10% who say they haven't heard enough. So a bit more negative. That's a slightly less negative than he was in June. So a little bit of shift there. I think in one sense, the numbers for Robin Voss are sort of more revealing. And the big number there is that 46% of people in the state say they haven't heard enough about the longtime Speaker of the Assembly to have an opinion about him, given the very important role that Voss plays in the state capitol. It's kind of striking and a little bit shocking that nearly half of the public don't have an opinion of him. In fairness, if we think about comparing him to Baldwin or Johnson, Baldwin and Johnson run statewide races where people everywhere get to vote. But as a member of the assembly, Robin Voss is elected by just 1/99th, less, just over 1% of the entire population votes for him. And so therefore, most of the public has not ever cast a vote for or against Robin Voss. And that shows up in the very high haven't heard enough.
Okay.
Of those with an opinion, 16% are favorable and 36 unfavorable. And that's a pretty striking net negative evaluation for him.
The poll found Governor Evers has a 53% approval rating compared to 51% for the state Supreme Court, 40% for the legislature. Do you often ask people about how they view the court and the legislature?
We do not. We've asked about the legislature from time to time, and this is a little bit down from the last time we asked about it in 2022. This is the first time we've asked about the Supreme Court, since the court is at the center of a lot of controversy this year. We're intending to ask about all three institutions repeatedly in the year ahead so that we can track how do opinions change about all three of the branches of government.
You asked the respondents whether the state Supreme Court should direct lawmakers to redraw voting maps before the next scheduled redrawing process in 2031. What did you learn there?
There, the interesting thing is that more people say that we should keep the current maps rather than redraw them now. 51% say keep the maps until the next scheduled redistricting in 2031, but 45% say we should redraw the maps now. Our question deliberately did not mention gerrymandering or the partisan balance in the legislature because we wanted to see whether people responded to this question of redrawing the maps if they had a clear image of what that was about. What we found was that indeed about 75% of Republicans want to keep the current maps and only 20% or so of Republicans want to redraw them. And it's nearly the exact opposite among Democrats. So what that shows is that partisans do get and understand that control of the legislature, the balance of power in the legislature could be affected by redrawing the maps, and they line up in the expected partisan ways. But a majority of independents say keep the maps for the next until 2031. This is a case where I think voters have some idea of what is at stake in redrawing the maps, but the fact that it's only a 75-25 split instead of the 90-10 that we see for voting choices shows that there's still some messaging to be done to explain to the public what's at stake in potentially redrawing the maps now versus keeping them for a while.
We're talking about the latest Marquette University Law School poll with its director, Charles Franklin. And you can join in with your questions and comments at 800-642-1234. Andy in Appleton is here. Hi, Andy. What is your question?
I got a lot of respect for the Marquette polls when I heard when voter IDs were required for voting came out, and the Marquette poll showed that it actually did suppress the votes significantly, especially Milwaukee County and other renter communities. And it just kind of took all the political talk away and said, okay, here's the real numbers. And I was very impressed. And it's important, I thought, to bring that back up in conversation because a bunch more of new voting legislation is being proposed. And I'm suspicious over the reasons for that.
Andy, thank you for that. And Charles, can you speak to that historical reference there to the voter? Voter ID. Go ahead.
Yeah, we've asked a lot about voter ID. I'm not sure that we've ever shown that there's a big vote suppression effect. Sorry, but I don't remember that. What we have shown is that in 2012, when this was already an issue, the public was fairly evenly split on voter ID. But over the years, as it has gone into effect, people support voter ID, that has gone up into the 60% or more area and really has sort of stabilized in the last several years. I do think that what we see in actual voter turnout is a positive message, and that is that we have seen historically high turnout, especially in midterm elections, but also in the 2020 presidential race. That has gone up over time. I think the big, very legitimate concern is the question of who is disadvantaged by voter ID and the requirements to get them. When I helped an 18-year-old register to vote, I was struck by how challenging it was for him to put together the required material because He didn't have a job, so he didn't have a paycheck. He didn't pay utilities because he lived with his parents. And eventually he did manage to get registered, but it was a little more of a challenge than you might think. Likewise, there are plenty of people that don't have driver's licenses, which many people do, but certain groups that don't generally have cars or driver's licenses, it's an impediment there. But I think overall, it's important from the polling point of view to understand that the public has substantially come around to the idea that showing an ID to vote is not something that they want. Now, new legislation could change that and could be more of an impediment to voting. But at least in public opinion, photo ID is now accepted.
Let's turn to the state Supreme Court with a new poll, including questions about Supreme Court justices. First question asks if the justices should be elected or appointed. And the majority say justices should be elected, as is the case right now. Why did you ask this?
Well, it's first of all, because about half the states appoint Supreme Court judges and about half elect them. We, of course, elect them. But in the, you know, hard-fought Supreme Court races in recent years, we've certainly heard arguments about them becoming de facto partisan events. And I thought it was an interesting question as well. Do people want to elect judges? And the answer is overwhelmingly we do. 87% say it's better to have justices elected. Just 12% disagree. And stunningly, this strong support for elections has almost no partisan difference between Republicans, independents, and Democrats. They're all up in the 80% range. So that's incredibly strong support for elected justices.
A similar majority say judicial candidates should discuss issues that come before the court. Do these sentiments reflect a shift from when judicial candidates were discouraged from sharing their legal opinions?
Well, it's really striking because, of course, this became an issue after the recent Supreme Court election with Republican legislators especially pushing the argument that judicial candidates shouldn't talk about issues, or therefore, if they do, they'll seem to be prejudging the cases that might come up. But here, too, we see a big majority, 80%, say that it's important for judicial candidates to discuss the issues so voters know what the candidates stand for. And only 19% say they should avoid talking about issues in order not to seem to prejudge cases. Here too, there's strong partisan alignment. 70% of Republicans say discuss issues, and well over 80% of Democrats say discuss issues. But those are big majorities regardless of party. And it certainly shows that if we're going to elect judges, and as you saw, a huge majority think we should, then people also think those candidates should be allowed to discuss issues rather than speak only in generalities or refuse to say how they view a variety of issues. There is a distinction there between talking about issues and prejudging cases, but the public really wants to hear what they think and not to artificially prevent candidates from talking about issues.
Charles Franklin is a professor of law and public policy at Marquette University, directs its law school poll, and the new poll is a snapshot of Wisconsin voters on state and national issues. Be part of the conversation. Call in with a question. You can share your views at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with Marquette University Law School poll director Charles Franklin. New survey examining how Wisconsin voters feel about state and national politics, the presidential candidates a year out from the 2024 election, and you can express your views. Call in with a question, share comments at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Charles, for years, polling has shown similar rates of voters feeling our state is heading in the right direction or, quote, the wrong track. Why use that wording to gauge public opinion?
Well, honestly, it's because we've always done it that way. This question was first used in the late 1980s, early 1990s. And are we headed in the right direction, or you feel things have gotten off on the wrong track? Seems like a bit of a throwback to the era of railroads. But the question became established and widely used in the years since. So when I was thinking about asking this kind of direction question, it seemed better to go with the established wording and stick with that so we could compare to other surveys by national or other state polls. There are, we could certainly just rephrase it as the right direction or the wrong direction, and surely people would answer in about the same way. But what we do see substantively in this poll is 36% say right direction, 62% say wrong track. There is a pretty strong partisan difference there, with a majority of Democrats saying we're headed in the right direction, but a substantially much bigger majority of Republicans saying we're on the wrong track, and independents largely picking the wrong track option as well. The one last thing about this is, when it was developed, it was assumed that this was a judgment of the incumbent administration, and a big wrong track number meant the incumbent was in trouble in the upcoming reelection bid. I think that power has diminished considerably, and we now see big partisan differences in direction, in right direction or not, and it doesn't seem to translate into votes. For example, in 2022, wrong track was still a very high number, but Tony Evers won re-election by 3.5 points.
Okay, so there's tradition in that question for sure. Let's turn to abortion. The poll found that 57% majority of respondents opposed the Supreme Court's decision in 2022 that overturned Roe v. Wade. While, access to abortion is being litigated here in Wisconsin, how is the issue playing out in other polling?
Yeah, we've seen a very consistent 30-something to either high 50s or low 60s on this question since the Supreme Court overturned Roe. So not quite a 2-to-1 majority opposing overturning Roe, or put differently, favoring at least some level of abortion rights. On a slightly different question that we've asked since 2012, we've consistently seen around 60 to 65% who say they think abortion should be legal in all or most cases, and about 30 to 35% saying it should be illegal in all or most. After the court ruled, we saw about a 5% shift on that, 5% fewer saying illegal in all or most, and 5% increase in saying legal in all or most. So a modest shift, but a clear majority. I think we saw the election results in Ohio on Tuesday on a statewide referendum that strongly passed with a substantial majority, putting abortion rights into their state constitution. That follows six states that had abortion referenda in 2022, all of which passed, including in conservative states like Kansas and Kentucky. The last thing is, there's been a lot of discussion about whether the abortion issue is declining in importance, but we see it still holding a lot of importance when we ask people how important is the issue. 38% say it's one of the most important issues, but that goes up to 55% with Democrats and down to about 25% with Republicans. So Democrats have an advantage on the intensity of this issue as well.
The economy seems to be a prevailing issue in this type of polling. You asked Wisconsin voters about their views on the national economy. How did they respond?
They're very negative about the national economy, just like on the right direction, wrong track measure. Only 3% say the economy is excellent. 24% say good. So that's just over a quarter, excellent or good. But 36% not so good and 37% poor. That's slightly better, actually, than some recent national polling. But what we see is a very large partisan split on this. And we also see when we ask people about their personal economic conditions, many more people, nearly 50%, say they're living comfortably on that question. But even there, there's a sharp partisan divide, with Republicans feeling like their personal situation is less good, Democrats feeling theirs is better. And so it's really hard to separate how much of this is partisanship affecting your views and how much of it is reality. Nevertheless, the negativity on the economy is a big issue. And when we ask whether Trump or Biden would handle the economy better, Trump has a substantial advantage on that. So this issue will play out over these next 12 months.
We only have a minute left, but I want to touch on world affairs just briefly. How did voters feel about the Israel-Hamas war?
Generally, they are supportive of U.S. aid to Israel by a pretty substantial number. Only 28% say we should give less support to Israel. But partisan differences again. Democrats are more split on this, with about 37% of Democrats saying we should give less support to Israel. Only 12% of Republicans say we should cut aid to Israel. That's the exact opposite of aid to Ukraine, where Democrats are much more supportive of aid to Ukraine. But now a majority, 55% of Republicans, say we should reduce our aid to Ukraine in its war with Russia.
Charles, thank you so much for breaking down the poll. Thanks so much for joining us.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Charles Franklin is a professor of law and public policy at Marquette University, directs the Marquette University Law School poll. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.